What's up, guys? Very excited to have this week's guest on the Strength Talking Shop podcast, the powerful Coach BJ Whitehead of Dayton High School, just outside of Houston. Good morning, Coach. How are you?
Morning. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing pretty good. He's probably just tired of me saying it over and over again, but this is legitimately another bucket list guest. I know I've said that for quite a few guests, but legitimately one of them. I've really looked up to BJ for a long time for his lifting and then now his coaching and stuff like that. And so I'm very grateful to have you on the podcast today, Coach.
Man, I really appreciate that. Means a lot. When people tell me those things, that just reiterates how old I'm getting and I've gotten. So, but no, I really appreciate it. It means a lot.
Absolutely. So how have things been as far as the school year and, you know, training the athletes and everything like that?
The school year is really, things are, you know, kind of getting back to normal. You know, we've had a few things that we've had to do because of the COVID and everything. But for the most part, everything's back to normal. We're rocking and rolling in the weight room out there on the grass, on the court. The kids, I mean, they're just – they wanted the normalcy back. And so it's almost like it's developed even more buy-in to the program and to the strength and conditioning from the kids. So it's just really awesome. It's awesome.
That's great to hear. So what does a typical schedule kind of look like for you? And I'm sure you handle all sports. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Gotcha. Yes, so what's kind of typical look like for that? Yeah. So what does it kind of look like for the athletes and stuff like that? How many days a week are they kind of coming in?
They're so whenever I came back to Dayton, our athletic director was Jeff Nations. He made a priority and mandatory that all sports lift during their athletic period at minimum of 2 days a week. Now you could find more time, but it had to be at least 2 days a week. The hardest part with that is trying to juggle. We've got one weight room. So yeah. The hardest part is juggling, you know, getting multiple sports in there, especially during quarantine and all that with a certain number of lifters in there. And it worked out great. Our sport coaches did an outstanding job getting them in there, supervising them, following through with the program. Everything's really been good. You know, and then with football, we would come in afterwards and things like that. And you just juggle your schedule however you need to. You know, we tell the kids always to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And I try to tell them it's not just a hashtag. You know, we have to live by it. And so, but that's how they prioritized it. And then, you know, like I said, our coaches, man, they do a great job of just adjusting and moving things on the fly. You know, we've had coaches set things up outside, a lot of extra band stuff, body weight stuff. I mean, it's really been great seeing, you know, everybody's minds kind of work and things like that. But I've been over here at the junior high for first through fourth period. And then I come over to the high school for football. And so the coaches, you know, they have their workout, they have their sheets and everything for the kids. The kids have done a really good job with it. And so they just adjust. If the coaches see a problem, hey, coach, this isn't working too good.
Right.
Can we take this out, put this in? Just I think it goes back to everything, you know, we talk about and we tell the kids, as long as there's communication, and communication is not just talking, but listening, then I think that we'll all be successful.
I love that you talked about the communication side and the listening side of it. Matt Rhodes told me that one time. He's like, Matt, you've got two eyes, you got two ears, you got one of these. Which one do you think you should be using a little bit more?
That's what I had it was a younger coach. It was funny. He was sitting over there one day and he kind of looked at me because, you know, I was a younger coach and thought I knew everything. And I was sitting there talking. He kind of looked at me. He said, two ears, one mouth, better sign up than stupid. I said, very smart, very wise, very wise.
Yeah, very wise. But I love that you keep that communication side with the sport coaches too as well, right? Because as we know, athletes, they're not exactly wanting to be powerlifters and like ourselves and stuff like that. They want to be ready for Friday night. And two, yes. Are you still coaching football too?
Yes, I coach D-line, primarily our nose guards.
Okay, gotcha. So you understand as from the sports coach standpoint, like if the kids are coming in on practice and they're, man – coach has really put me through the ringer on something. It's like, well, there's a miscommunication right there, right?
Yes. And, you know, like I kind of says, you know, talking to you, hey, you bring up powerlifting or whatever. You know, you've got a competition coming up. I just had one, and I'm not going to max out on bench, squat, and deadlift Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday if I'm going to compete on Saturday. So I got to be able to be recovered a little bit because it's, you know, that's what I tell the kids in the weight room. Cause you have kids that, you know, some love the weight room. You know, I've got a few kids that just love it. You can't get them out of it. Some that, hey, I'm doing it because I need to. And then you've got some that, coach, why are we in here? I don't get this. And so the thing about it is, you know, with a few of them, I talked to them and I said, look, I'm not trying to make you a power lifter or a Olympic weightlifter. I'm just trying to make you a better athlete so you can be prepared and recover for Friday night, for Tuesday night. Whenever your performance time is, I want you to be able to put out the best package you can. And the weight room is going to be an extension of that.
Yeah, exactly. One thing I wonder with high school, with I've never dealt with high school athletes before. When they start getting that buy-in within the weight room, do you kind of see their confidence almost like a peacocking up a little bit?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. They tend to, you know, most high school kids, they walk, you know, their shoulders are pulled forward. And it's not because they've just done too much anterior work. It's because it's that lack of confidence. And now they get out and they're proud and they walk around and, you know, they have an aura about them. And, and like I said, we've got kids that, you know, and like the buy-in, it's just like they see other kids doing that and they feed off of them. And it's just, I mean, it's awesome. It's a beautiful sight.
Well, and that's what I love to see is because, you know, even from a male into a female standpoint too, as well, right? Like that's where it's really, really cool to see. It's like, we can do all this as a school and then you kind of come together, right?
Yes. Well, and that's, and I've got two, I've got three daughters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I've got one that's in seventh grade and then I've got a junior and I've got a freshman and they both powerlifted for me this year. And so, you know, now it's just kind of like, hey, they're coming around the house flexing. Hey, check out my back. And hey, do you see my anterior delts? You know, so they're kind of doing that. So, I mean, I kind of like it, but, you know, it makes you feel good that they're understanding and they're buying into it. And then, you know, so it's fun. It's fun. And just to see, and I'm just, and we may even talk about this later. I don't know. I'm probably getting way off topic, but you know, you talked about the female side of it. And so I also coached powerlifting at our high school and my first year back in Dayton and we had four total girl powerlifters. And that was because I stole a couple from the softball team at that time. And I had to give them back after our first meet. But at that point in time, I'd stolen them. And this year we had 20 girls qualify for regionals.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it's but just you see the girls come in, you see their confidence. And, you know, in the past, you know, after school, we have the weight room open and it's packed. And so in the past, you know, a lot of the female athletes, they would just kind of wait for the guys to finish or if it's football players or whatever. I totally understand. It's probably because they stink. I don't know. but they would wait around. Now they come in, they see an open rack, they come in and they get started. And so it's amazing.
I love to hear that from the comment side. What was it like going from 4 to 20? Like, I'm sure there was a long process within that, right?
The next year, we worked it out with the softball coach because the problem is we play our softball games are Tuesday, Friday nights and our powerlifting meets are on Thursdays.
Ah.
And so we got together, we discussed a schedule of the meets that to get the girls to lift in because they would miss a day of practice and it was a day. And I know they're missing practice for a competition, but they're missing the day before a game.
Yeah.
So we worked it out to where we found out the best one. And, you know, and then those girls out of that, probably, I think that year there were 6 or 8 of those girls and all but one of them were that qualified for regionals were powerlifters. I mean, excuse me, were softball players.
So
I knew we had something going with those softball players. So I was like, hey, we got to come up with something and we got to, you know, work this out. And then, I mean, I'm not taking credit because I did not go to one batting practice, but I think we hit like 40 something home runs that year, maybe. Girls were great hitters. It just, maybe the ball just flew a little further at that point in time. I don't know, but they were really, really a special fun group to work with. You know, some of them are, you know, now they're playing collegiate softball and things like that. So it's fun to see that. They'll send me videos from them in the weight room and stuff. And you know, one of them, she did some unassisted pull-ups the other day. So she sent me a video of that and she was really excited. So it was pretty awesome.
And see, that's where I look at it as a coach. You have such an impact for a lifetime, right? Like how did you get into coaching, right? Was, I'm sure it was a high school coach probably involved in getting
it. It was my high school coach. It was Coach Brian Norville. And it's funny, every year in high school, I think I played a different position. I went from nose guard to middle linebacker to outside linebacker. And he changed positions every year. I don't know if that's saying that no one else could coach me. I don't know what it was, but he and I were together the whole time. And just we developed such a bond and such a relationship. And right then and there, I knew that's what I wanted to be, was to be a coach.
Yeah. And see, that's where you and where you're at right now can have such a huge impact on, you know, these males and females at such a young age to help mold them and everything like that. That's why I think it's so important for the high school coaches to kind of look past the sets and reps. And it's like, let's look at the psychology and the what's in between the ears kind of thing, especially in today's 100%. Age.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. But we'll skip towards the sets of the reps. What have you kind of found to be successful with training athletes?
Honestly, I think and it goes back to communication with the kids, I think. You know, because I was telling me, you know, a few coaches were talking the other day, and
okay, we're back. Sorry, Coach Whitehead got a little bit too excited with his hands there. But we were talking about what has he found to be successful with coaching athletes.
Yeah, sorry about that. Really, I think it goes back to, once again, communications. Because we talked about, me and a coach were talking the other day, and kids, and came up with something that kids see, they can see through muddy water. It doesn't have to always be clear for them. They can see through muddy water. So they see through all the, pardon me, but all the BS that, you know, we want to try to feed them and tell them to get them to do something. I don't think you need to play mind games with them. I mean, I think there's times you have to maybe try to get another, you know, rep out of them or something like that. But I think, honestly, if you let the kid know that what you're doing's got their best interest at heart, and explain to them and communicate to them with what lifts and activities that you're doing, how it could benefit them and what it's for. Because in the past, whenever I was growing up, you know, coaches could just tell you to do something and you would just do it because
exactly.
There is no talking back. I'm just going to do it. Now, kids need verification. They need to understand why they're doing something. They're way past me in a mental capacity at this point in time, as I was, probably even now. But they need verification as to why they're doing things. And if you have to come up with some nonsense to explain it to them, to get them to do it, then maybe what you're trying to sell them is not that good a product. So just be you, let them know what it's for. And if it's still not, if there's still an issue with it, then go back to the drawing board, because at the end of the day, we need those kids more than those kids need us, probably.
Yes. Yes. I can be the authentic you, right? And I think too, as well, I listened to a podcast this morning, actually, Dave Aranda, the Baylor head football coach.
Yes.
And he said something very similar to you in the fact of, you know, he has conversations with his athletes on like, this is why we're doing something. This is how I want you to do it. But in a way of meeting where the athlete's at. Right. And I think that's so important. And you alluded to it, is like, you're going to give them the explanation. So they kind of know like, all right, this is where I'm leading to. This is why we're doing something like that, because there's nothing worse than when an athlete looks at him and they're like, why the heck are we even do this, coach? And you look at him and you're like, because I said we're doing it this way. Right.
Yeah, that's the worst answer ever.
No, that really is. And two, it's like that all gas, no brakes mentality. Yeah. You end up getting into an accident if that happens as well, too.
100%.
Yes, and you know that probably from your own experience lifting and stuff like that. It's like when you got to know when to press it, but then also back it off and everything like that, too. As well. Is that something that you kind of allude to with the athletes?
Yeah, it's funny because I've had coaches ask me, and we'll talk about doing something, and you know, they'll be wanting to do something, and they're like, "Hey, what do you think?" And so I ask them, I said, "Well, do you want the football coach answer, or do you want the strength conditioning coach answer?" Because they're actually now they're two different things. They are two totally different things at times now. You know, and I tell the kids all the time, you know, I said, this isn't right. I'm going to kind of be going back on what I just said, but kind of do as I say, not as I do,
right,
or have done.
because I told him I have these scars for just trial and error to make sure that what the doctors and everyone was saying was really true. But, you know, focusing more on, you know, a dynamic prep and things like that. I mean, take that little bit of extra time, you know, do a little prehab so you don't have to do rehab. You know, listening to Jim Wendler talk, I mean, an off season is not, you know, 4 months. It's four years. You know, where can we get these athletes from their freshman year to the time, by the time they graduate? Not, hey, how much weight can I put on them during this off season period? I mean, you know, that looks cool for your leaderboards and things like that. But at the end of the day, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like a weight loss. You know, if you lose a lot of weight really fast, you're probably not going to keep it on, and it's probably not that good. So let's you know, and like, you know, as a former guest would say, you know, like Monty Sparkman says, you know, let's slow cook them. Let's get a good product out of it. And, you know, that's, you know, I think that's the best way to do it. And my mentality has changed throughout the years.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I find to be interesting. It's like the evolution over time, the ebb and flows of being a coach. It's like, you kind of start to think you understand it, and then you're like, oh man, something new comes around. You're like, oh crap, this is a whole new situation, right?
It's like raising daughters.
See, I got two little boys, both are, you know, under 2 years old. So it's, I'm learning something new every single day, man. It's wild. But my whole thing with the whole freshman to senior thing is something that you said that I find to be completely fascinating, because as a high school coach, you get to see them as a freshman all the way up to a senior year. And I'm sure the development is, I mean, obviously you have daughters, like you said, but just the development that you see from a physiological standpoint, it's got to be insane.
Yeah. I'm going to use, you know, we've got a young athlete. I'm going to use him as an example. He played linebacker for us. So he came here as a freshman, and, you know, and I can say this, I've told him himself, but he came in and he looked like Steve Urkel. Mm-hmm. Right. And now he looks like Stephon. So he came in, and you don't realize, you think at the time, I said, hey, this is a pretty good looking freshman kid, you know, he's got a good frame and this and that. Well, then when you start doing his progress picks and things like that, you're like, oh my goodness. So he's a senior, he's going to be going to Davidson. He's probably 6'1", 6'1" and a half, maybe 6'2", about 195 pounds. Gonna play linebacker. He's number 8 in his class. He powerlifted for me this year. He finished 8th in the state in powerlifting. He was awarded best deadlifter in the state at the state meet. He won it at the regional meet. We looked it up on openpowerliftingwatch.com, and for his age group and weight class, he's number 1 deadlifter in the country. But just to see his progress, just mental wise in that area, in that room, and then his body transformation. Right. And God, it's been amazing just to see what's happened through all that. And just like you said, trusting the process, staying true to it, not trying to do too much. Now, he's one of those kids that I have to, hey, Cam, why are you at the high school right now? you don't need to be up there lifting right now. But he is, he really was one of those kids that bought into it. And him and other athletes, they have helped the buy-in process from other athletes. They see his videos, they see him, you know, at the track meets and things like that on the football field. And, you know, they just, first of all, you see the outer presence and you're like, wow. And they see they want to buy in. And then they see him in the weight room. They see his work ethic. They see his dedication. He comes and he speaks to them. It's just those athletes are the ones that help the buy-in process. It's not us. It's each other. They're the ones that help that process. The biggest compliment I got, have ever received as far as a student athlete was at my meet that I lifted in last weekend. And he and a few other of our players came to watch. And one of the lifters comes up to him and he said, hey, BJ, are those your athletes over there? And I said, yeah, you know, they're some of my players and lifters. And he said, I could tell. And I was like, really? He goes, yeah. He said, you can tell by their back, their traps, and their neck. I'm like, yes, yes.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's, you know, like with anyone else, you know, that's something we really try to focus on, is the posterior chain. So anyway, I was like, yes, thank you guys. You make me look like I know what I'm doing for a little bit anyway.
Wow, man, what a great compliment. That's so good. Like, as a coach, so gratifying. But then too, I think of that from a standpoint of you never know when a kid is going to, especially not in high school, you never know when they're he or she is going to hit that next level. And it's like, you got to be able to coach those kids all the way through, because it could be their senior year. They could peak at the beginning of their junior year. You never really know. Like, they could come back one summer, you hadn't seen them or something like that. Yes. And they grew 3 inches and you're like, what the heck happened?
Yeah.
And so you got to be able to get them ready for their frame, because like, I think of Khalil Mack, he didn't start playing football until he was like a junior or senior in high school.
Yeah.
He kind of grew into his body. It's like, what if the coaches would have never continued?
They gave up on him.
Yeah. Would have given up on him. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's something you alluded to that I'm like, you got to really think about that, especially in the high school ranks. For sure. Well, I kind of want to selfishly flip over to you yourself, Lincoln, unfortunately. I know you probably don't want to talk about yourself too much, but like, you are obviously you've totaled 2,000 pounds before in sleeves.
Yeah.
Incredible. Can you talk a little bit about like how you got into powerlifting yourself?
Yeah. So it's funny. Now the 2,000 pounds was back when it wasn't a warm up for the guys it is now, but no. So yeah, it was kind of a funny story. Me and one of our coaches, Coach Little here at the high school, we would always work out after practice and things. And so that summer, my wife had taken a job with her dad on the pipeline in Florida. So her and my three daughters had just moved out there. Okay. It's important to the stories, I promise. I talk a lot, everybody knows, but this part's important, I promise. And so we had a young athlete that had been off to college. He came back that summer and he's like, hey, coach, he said, would it be okay if I lift at the field house sometime? He said, I really don't have money for a membership right now. You know, can I come back and lift up there? And I was like, hey, tell you what, me and Coach Little, we lift after practice. Come on up. You can lift with us. He said, okay. I said, I can't let you lift in here, you know, unsupervised, but I know we'll be in here for a couple hours. So just come on here and you can lift with us. Okay. He said, all right, coach. So we're in there. We lift. Got a good little training group going together. Within, he said, coach, he said, we need to do a meet together. I said, man. And this was right before raw powerlifting became, you know, popular and things like that. It was still right. Geared. I love geared powerlifting. I love strongman. I love CrossFit. I love anything strength sport related. What I did not, and what I told him, I said, but the only thing about it is, I said, I'm not getting into gear. I said, one, I don't like how tight it fits.
Yep.
I said, I don't want to have to, if I don't have, you know, someone there with me to be able to put the equipment on to spot me like we need to. I said, if I want to be able to train by myself, I can. I said, so I would like to do it raw. And he said, no, coach, that's fine. I said, okay. So I said, well, here, I said, I'll find us a coach. And he said, well, why don't you just run our workouts for us like you did in school? I said, well, that's probably because I need somebody to hold me accountable on squat day.
Yep.
And so he's like, okay. So I got to researching. I'm from Jacksonville, Texas. And so I went in for the weekend, and a guy named Anthony Moyer had just broke the world bench press record out in Vegas. And I noticed that he was coached by Josh Bryant. I saw the paper on his desk when I went in to train at the hospital there in Jacksonville when I came in to visit family. And so I saw it, you know, I'm kind of looking over Peak and I'm writing that email address down and stuff. So after that, you know, I get it figured out. So then I head out to Florida for Christmas. I emailed Josh and said, hey, look, thinking about doing a meet, never done one, have no clue what I'm doing really. So he said, well, hey, about 3 months out and 12 weeks out, just find a meet 12 weeks out, get back in touch with me, we'll talk. I said, okay. So I found a meet. It was an APF meet. And so Greg Tillinghast, I think, was the regional director that day. And so I find the meet, email Josh, we talk. Come to find out, Josh and I had met at the Texas High School State Powerlifting Coach Association probably I think a year or two before that at the state meet. And so I didn't know who he was, and so then we get together, we talk, he's asking my max, as I said, Josh, I haven't maxed and I don't know how long, I'm just in here working out nowadays. So we go through all that. Well, then sign up for a meet. I tell the younger athlete Zach, I said, hey, look, I said, I'll pay for the programming and we'll just modify it to your numbers. Okay. I said, you know, you're in college, don't worry about it. So anyway, do that, get set up on it, go do the meet. I think I benched 501 raw my first meet.
Unbelievable.
No, I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I think it was just all nerves and adrenaline. Because I think I opened it somewhere around 450. No. I opened at 400. Then I went 450. Then I went 501. And I'm sitting there the whole time. I'm like, I don't know. These are, I don't know what I'm doing. And so I'm asking, you know, the people that came with me. I'm like, hey, what do y'all think? And they're like, yeah, go this. I'm like, y'all are crazy. I've never done that.
Yeah.
So I think my first total was 1790. I text Josh and I was like, hey, I said, I benched 501. I squatted this, benched this. And you could tell where my focus was at the time was bench. He goes, did you have a shirt on? He said, with a shirt. I'm like, yeah, I had like a Hanes t-shirt. He said, no, I'm talking about a bench shirt, you dummy. I was like, oh, no. And so anyway, he's like, where'd that come from? I said, I have no clue. And so then I wanted to get one and to give me another meet in right before football season. So I think I had like 2.5 months. Well, then, you know, we took the next week off. I got sick for a week. Then this and that. So I think I ended up training for 2 weeks for the next meet. Long story short, I was not ready. And yeah. So that kind of – and but Josh, he let me do it. It was like a teaching tool. Like, hey, look, don't sign up this close back-to-back anymore. But yeah. I'm going to let you do it. He said, I understand why. And so then you know, and ever since then, I've been hooked on it. And we've done that ever since. And so, but that's how I fell into it. And the reason, the important story about my wife, you know, moving to Florida for that time was because I didn't have anything to do it, and no one was at home.
Right.
And so we'd get through with football practice, and I would, you know, we'd go, me and Zach, he's a young college kid. We'd train after football practice. So it didn't matter if I came home at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, nobody was there. So, yes. So that was my way of passing the time for them not being there. So, but yeah.
Man, that is – to first meet a 500-pound freaking bench is incredible.
honestly, I'm going to be that guy. That was about all I was doing leading up into it. I wasn't big on squatting. I told our athletes, I said, I bench what I want to and I squat what I have to. And they're like, what do you mean by that? I said, whatever you squat, I'm going to squat a little bit more just so I can say I did.
Yeah,
but I did not like doing it. So, but I think my first squat was, I had a 650 squat, and then I think I had a
ridiculous.
Like I said, the bench press was 501, and then I think the deadlift was like a 639, maybe.
I mean, that's insane. What I love is like I've heard the stories. Just I love the mental aspect of powerlifting. Like to me, because like right now, like you just went through a prep and a meet. I'm going through a prep right now, and the mental side. The mental side of it is I take so many lessons from powerlifting just in daily life and everything like that. It's incredible.
Yes.
It's incredible. Can you talk about that mental side? Because I mean, you're obviously handling a lot bigger weights than I am, but it's like, it's insane to me.
Well, you know, like with the mental part, everybody asks me, you know, like, hey, what are you thinking of whenever you step up to the bar and this and that? And honestly, I try to do all my thoughts and my preps and all my warm-ups and all my down sets leading up to my top sets. So that way, whenever it's time to go and that top set's there, you don't have to think about anything. I mean, we tell the kids, hey, practice good reps all the time.
Yeah.
So if you're practicing good reps, you don't ever have to think about anything when you're doing it. It's just turns into habit at that point in time. And if you practice it right, it should fall into place. But yeah, now this last prep, and I'm going to say this, and I want to go ahead and put this out there. Whenever I was in my prime as a power lifter, I tell these things, not proud of it, but I think it's part of it. I was good at three things, and that was squat, bench, and deadlift.
Right.
There was a lot of other things that I probably needed to work on to be better at. But squat, bench, and deadlift, that was my number one focus. When my wife and kids were in Florida, that's all I had to worry about and focus on, that and work. And then when they moved back, I had a hard time adjusting. I was like, hey, this is not just about BJ Whitehead right now. You know, it's not about BJ Whitehead and his squat, bench, and deadlift. You know, there's other people involved. And so it took me a little bit. And I really think that my tricep injury, when I blew my tricep out, I really think that was God's way of saying, hey, slow down, get your priorities set back straight to where they need to be.
Yep.
And, you know, you're a father, you're a husband, and you're a mentor first.
Yep.
And you're a powerlifter on the side. That's a hobby for you. And I'm not taking away powerlifting or anybody that is putting it in the forefront by any means or anything that they do, powerlifting wasn't paying my bills.
Exactly.
It wasn't paying my bills at all. So the thing was, you know, that was, those were hard mental lessons that I'd had to learn. And then, you know, and but I think it made me a better person. I wouldn't change any of those things either, because I think those are all lessons that you have to go through in life, to figure out who you really are and find out more about yourself. And so that, you know, and it let me know that, hey, you can adjust and you can prioritize, you know, family first, lifting can come second. And then, you know, you can still be successful at both.
Yep.
And so that was the biggest mental part for powerlifting for me. And so now, you know, it's just like another part of my day whenever it's time to go do that workout. You know, and it's time to get a heavy squat session in. Okay, you know, we tell our kids, hey, when you're in the classroom, you be a great student. You be a great kid. When you're in the community, you be an example to others. When you step on that football field, okay, now it's time to flip that switch a little bit, and it's time to turn in who we need you to be at this point in time. Be a star at your role. And so I think with all those things coming into play, that I was able to channel my inner anger to those top sets, let's put it that way, for the mental part of it. And then just, and be prepared daily. You know, I mean, like, you know, I mean, hey, you know, check your schedule. All right. Hey, so what days do you lift on? Well, it just depends.
Yeah.
You know, it depends. And so I try to look at my schedule a week ahead, 2 weeks ahead or whatever, and then schedule the training days around life.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Don't schedule life around training.
Yes. And that's what I used to do.
Well, and you're preaching to me right now, BJ, having two young kids and a wife and stuff like that. I've gone through that here recently. It's like, what comes first? Like, what's most important? And you talked about flipping the switch kind of thing. It's like, when I'm with family, I don't need to be focused on training or lifting or the meat. It's like, that stuff's going to come to me.
Yeah.
It kind of comes from it's kind of a confidence thing. Like, maybe I'm just not as confident in what I think is going to work. Or it's like, your mind's racing on, is this going to work or is it going to fail? And that's the inevitable. You're like, because luckily I've had good success in my first couple of meets. It's like, well, what happens with this one? What if it turns out bad? And I'm doing something totally different now. I've kind of changed training styles. And it's like, oh man.
Yeah.
Like, so I'd love that you opened up about that, because I think those are real stressors that people don't understand that can happen when you go down this rabbit hole of still competing in something.
Yeah, I mean, I was consumed with it, like, and with numbers. And so, you know, we tell our athletes, it goes back to, you notice how everything we talk about, either something our athletes are teaching us, something we teach our athletes.
Exactly.
It all comes back to us, right? It all comes full circle, correct? But so, you know, we tell them, hey, be where your feet are.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, then why not us?
Exactly.
When I'm with family, be where your feet are. When I'm with the football team, be where your feet are. When I'm training the kids, they've got it all. When it's my time, okay, take that hour and a half, however long it takes you to train, take that time, let it be your time.
Yep.
Because I promise, because, you know, if I go a few days without training, my wife will be like, hey, you haven't trained in a couple of days, have you? And I was like, no, how you know? Am I looking kind of small? She's like, no, your attitude stinks. Okay, you're right, babe. Sorry.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, no,
just be where your feet are.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I love that advice. I need to use it for my own self, that's for sure, Coach. But no, we'll go ahead.
If we all heeded our own advice, we'd all be pretty good, right?
Man, it's sometimes I'll hear myself talk about stuff and I'm like, I'm not even doing that. I'm like, what a hypocrite I am, man. It's like, geez, Louise, come on, man.
Yeah.
But Coach, we'll go and get you out of here. I'm very grateful to have you on here. We got the one last question though, is what are you grateful for?
And I tell you, first and foremost, I'm grateful for my family.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for them, couldn't get through the daily activities or the daily stressors in life. I'm thankful and grateful for all the opportunities that I've had. Probably had more opportunities than I probably should have or have been owed. And then last, but just the people that I've met in life. So I'm really grateful for that.
Absolutely. Good family, good people around you. Makes everything a lot easier and makes, you know, just life so much more fun, man. But Coach, I cannot thank you enough for wanting to do this. Thank you so much.
Man, well, I appreciate it. Thank you. I'm honored for being on here. I've listened to your podcast for a while. I'm not worthy of being on here, but I greatly appreciate it. I'm going to soak up every minute of it. No, thank you for taking the time, man. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, hey, everybody. If you don't already follow this man on Twitter and Instagram, you're crazy. There's an awesome YouTube video, too, as well, about your story that I hope people go and watch, too, as well, that Josh has put up. So thank you again, Coach, and everybody. Stay strong.